Pete, I see a little car service company.
The podcast.
Hello and welcome to the first Partners in Costs podcast, Podcost, where we want to crack open costs, bring light to the darkest nether regions of costs, and hopefully provide some practical costs guidance to anyone mad enough to listen. Today we'll be exploring time recording, both why you record and how you record it. We will dip our toes, because there's two of us, into both points and give you, our listeners, a brief overview as to why this issue is more important than you may think, look at some challenges, and then share three or four tips to improve your time recording, increase profitability, and improve recoveries. So my name is Lee Dixon, no relation, and I'm a cost draftsman with 23 years behind the calculator. And my co-host on this cost journey of discovery into the online world is Mr. Dominic Woodhouse, advocate, trainer, actor, musician, and fitness expert.
Hello, everybody.
So I suppose the best place to start, Dom, is why should solicitors time record?
I think especially at the moment, it'd be really easy to think that time recording has become less important now that we have introduction or expansion of fixed recoverable costs in relation to lots of claims they've not applied to before. That said, I think time recording issues probably are more important now in 2023, perhaps, than they have been over the last 20 years or so. Even when you're dealing with fixed recoverable costs, I think there's going to be a greater expectation that people will be seeking to recover shortfalls in costs from their client beyond the fixed cost that recovered into parties. We know from experience over the last 10 years that there's definitely been an upsurge in people challenging their solicitors' bills of costs. If we're looking to engage those vulnerability additional cost potentials within the fixed recoverable cost regime, then that is still going to require an assessment of costs of some kind. So it all comes back down to being able to prove and substantiate the time that's been spent, what work you've done, why you were doing it, and specifically why it's taken so long in every instance.
Fair enough. I mean, I suppose essentially the rule is if you don't time record, you don't get paid.
Absolutely. And solicitors' practices, they exist in order to make a profit, yes. For us, always acting for people that are claiming damages. It's enabling access to justice for their clients, but fundamentally they are a business. If they can't make money, if they can't bring in those costs, then they don't get to enable access to justice for their clients.
And of course, we live in a world where the majority of people charge by an hourly rate, and an hourly rate is determined by time. And time needs to be justified. I think this is probably most relevant in respect of budgeting and the need to monitor and track budgeting via very smart and effective time recording.
Yeah, absolutely. Electronic time recording systems obviously play a big role nowadays. Enables firms, the partners and supervisors with responsibility for them to be able to see in real time how much time is being recorded, how much potential revenue they may be generating, enables lots of things on a broader scale, like determining investment in the practice, where they can expand and so on. But on a smaller individual file scale, it's the only way you're going to be able to tell whether you're managing to stick to an inter-parties budget, for instance, or whether you're going to have a big overshoot and end up not being able to recover lots of costs.
And especially in the news recently, more so perhaps than in recent memory, our own client estimates and the need to provide the estimate at the outset and then track your spend against the estimate, because you don't want a nasty surprise at the end and find out that you haven't been monitoring your time recording, and there's a difference there because you're going to get penalised on it.
Absolutely.
So I suppose the next question would be, how should a solicitor time record? So the most obvious answer is via a file note, but we were chatting before we recorded this about how file notes are maybe a little bit analog, and in modern litigation you don't necessarily need a formal file note, or perhaps a better way to put it is we shouldn't need a formal file note when you have quite effective cost case management systems now.
Yeah, because what we're talking about is fundamentally time recording. As soon as we start talking about time recording as cost draftsmen, and probably most people working in the legal profession, you immediately start thinking about file notes as well. What we always want to be able to see is, again, like I've already mentioned, you want to be able to demonstrate what work that you did on any particular day, why you were doing it, and why it took so long. You can demonstrate that in a time ledger, work in progress sheets, any form of document that retains that information. That said, it is 2023. We are in the modern era of litigation. Electronic time recording systems are prevalent. Lots of judges and the people that are going to be assessing costs will have an assumption or an expectation that they'll see time recorded in a file note, one standalone document which explains exactly what you did on any given day. Personally, I don't see any distinction whatsoever as long as we have the data and the information that demonstrates what you were doing, why you were doing it, and why it took so long. But always have to flag up that there is an expectation on the parts of a lot of judges to see that separate attendance note.
I think one way to approach notes, and you sort of danced around it a little bit there, is the philosophy of what does a note look like? What is its content? And I think a lot of solicitors based on 23 years of reading file notes, you often find them to have the same problems. There's this consistency in the inconsistency, which is they don't always give you the information you need and what we need to prepare the bill and what the judge needs just to assess it. You mentioned the sort of triumvirate of questions. What we tend to apply is a principle of what are you doing? Why are you doing it? Now, those are both pretty obvious. And then how did it take so long? Now, that's the one that is often lost, because we often do see content file notes that are high and they don't explain why. And there's often a very good reason, but obviously we don't have anything more than that file note. We can't guess. If I was to say one criticism of the majority of file notes I see, it's that they don't explain to me why the time was spent that was spent.
Absolutely. I think in that as well, you make a really good point, which is, in effect, the audience, potentially, if we can put it like that, for your file notes. First of all, there's going to be the person that drafts your bill. When we prepare a bill, we realistically will be limited in the quality of that bill by the information that's on that file. Yes, we can go through every document that's on that file, develop a really good understanding of what was being done and why, but bearing in mind that costs are always going to be assessed and argued about, bills drafted years after the fact of a piece of work being done, we will lose all that nuance of why a particular item of work was being done at a time, or potentially being done at a particular time. We almost certainly will lose some of the nuance of why it took such in any particular length of time to do a particular piece of work. So yeah, without that information, the immediate information that's obvious to the person doing the work at the time, then for the first person that is the audience for your file note, which is the draftsman, they're going to be hampered in their ability to then translate that into a bill that really justifies and expands on that claim. As you mentioned, we've also, though, got a much more distant potential audience for that file note, which is the judge. In as much as your draftsman may have expanded upon your time records when they're preparing that bill of costs, when it comes to a detailed assessment, the judge will want to look at the file note. If that file note is distinctly lacking in comparison to the information that's in the bill, they are going to be sceptical that actually the bill represents an accurate description of what was being done at the time, if that information isn't in the note itself or similar time record.
I mean, an example might be preparing a witness statement. We often see times for preparing witness statements that might be 5 or 6 hours. We have no idea if that time is reasonable. Most of your draftsmen have either never prepared a statement or will have prepared a statement in a completely different context. So when we see that, we can dress it up and maybe justify it within the context of the file around that entry. But the actual nuance of what was done and why it took the time it took, that's really the information we need in the file note and the judge will need so they can understand.
Yeah, absolutely. Witness statements is a really good example. In preparation of a statement, you might have had to look at lots of different documents. You've taken instructions from your client. You'll likely cross-check those instructions against other documentary evidence that you've got to see if there's inconsistency. Then you prepare the statement with all those things in mind. Unless you've made a record of the fact that you've had to consider all those other additional documents, the judge on it, when it comes to a detailed assessment, when your draftsman explains to them, well, in order to prepare this statement, they would have had to consider X, Y, and Z documents, the medical records, a statement from another person. Unless it actually says that in the file notes, the judge quite possibly will be a little bit sceptical whether that is the process that they went through. And I think any time we're talking about detailed assessment, always reminding ourselves that most assessments are going to be undertaken on a standard basis. On the standard basis, doubt is going to be resolved in favour of the opponent. It is the stick that will be used to beat you on assessments and reduce your costs. On that, or in that context, if you can indulge me for just 1 minute with a couple of references to some cases. Back in 2022, just last year, case of Lyle and Fox against Bedborough, just demonstrating this point about standard basis and it being used as a stick to beat you with. I think it was Master Rowley in that that said there is obviously some conjecture involved in considering the time claimed in the absence of any attendance notes, but that's a matter for the receiving party. In the absence of such notes, then inevitably any doubt goes towards the paying party on the standard basis. Back in 2009, again, just referring to a case from the SCCO, Fatale against Walbrook. In that matter, the judge comments there's been a large reduction to that bill, and primarily that's because there's an absence of attendance notes. But I think interestingly, it goes on to say, such a failure materially contributes to the length and cost of assessment proceedings. It leads to a scrambling around among the papers when the costs are queried to seek to work out what was done at different stages, often without any clear answer, followed by a guessing game on the part of the cost judge. That's just a judge that's irritated and is not on your side anymore. Assessments have to be conducted proportionately. There's a time pressure. The judges have limited reading time. There's only so much time they can devote during a hearing to allow a party to try and work out or explain what was done. So again, without really clear, nice, articulate attendance notes, then we're definitely up against it, especially on a standard-based assessment. Even most recently, last week, the week before, case from the SCCO, Master Leonard in All Seas Group against Sultana. And that was, in this, he's talking about conference notes where there's been a conference with solicitors and counsel. And says in that that where there is a substantial conference, he expects to see a detailed record of that conference, and that without such a record, an element of doubt inevitably arises. Not so much as to the time that's actually spent, but whether it can be fully justified. And I think importantly, makes the comment that in such circumstances, it is necessary to take a conservative approach, as it is where it is unclear exactly what work is being done or what the outcome might have been. I think what we get to there is a detailed record of exactly what you've done. You're hitting data points in explaining what you did, why it took so long.
Yep, I agree. I think it's also very important to note the impact of doubt. The majority of assessments are standard basis assessments. It's easy sometimes to forget the concept of doubt and how it can affect recoveries and how time recording can be used to avoid those sanctions, those penalties. So doubt operates almost on two levels. So you've got the first level, which is, as you've just said, there are no file notes. Therefore, doubt will be exercised in the favour of your opponent. But then on a more practical level, the content of the file notes themselves, if they lack substance or if they have something about them that can either create doubt of itself or your opponent can use to generate doubt, then you're on the back foot. I mean, one simple example would be language, the power of language and the power of words. Words have meaning, and there are certain words, no matter what the underlying reason for the use of that word, they carry with them a certain connotation. So the most obvious one would be amended. Amended suggests an error. It suggests you are correcting a mistake. Now, it may not be that. It may be that whoever has used the word amended has just fallen back on the word amended because it's convenient. But if that's never spelt out in the file note, or if the work surrounding that note, so there's multiple expert reports or schedule of loss, for example, if there's two different schedules of loss, so we can see what was amended, if that's absent, and sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't, then it's very easy, I should probably say, for your opponent to say, well, that amended is suggests a mistake. And once that doubt is created, you're on the back foot. Doubt is incredibly powerful. And a file note and time recording via a file note is one of the best ways to get around that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as well, sometimes, as you say, there are connotations to certain words. Amended being a really good example. You can tie yourself in knots, I imagine, trying to think of words to use other than amended sometimes. So perhaps the best thing might be to explain exactly what was amended and why, because then later you can actually justify that. Slightly tangential, but in order to, and it's a file management issue really, we're talking about time recording, I think a top tip would always be to keep every draft of every document that you ever prepare as the best way of demonstrating, in addition to your detailed file note, exactly what was being done at any particular time. Witness statements and schedules of loss might go through numerous amendments, sometimes the small elements of them. It's going to be really important to be able to demonstrate again exactly what you were doing on any particular occasion.
So taking the idea about language and use of, for example, of the word amend, and perhaps one practical tip would be, well, but there's two tips. One is to break apart your file note into its constituent elements. So if you prepare a statement for 7 hours, that's obviously a peak of time that will draw judicial and your paying party's attention. If you can break that apart, it helps your cost draftsmen because they've maybe never prepared a statement or not in the way you have. And they can't tinker with your file note. They can only use what you give them. So anything you can do to lessen that peak is great. And another guide, another tip would be to think about the language again and how, for example, if you prepare a schedule of loss and spend all day on it, and your note literally says preparing schedule of loss, then the next day you decide you're working further on that schedule of loss, but that file note says amending schedule of loss, and that's all those two file notes say, there is obviously going to be a problem there. We are going to have to justify it. So it would be incredibly beneficial to yourselves to think about that and not use the word amending, or explain what that amendment was. What did you actually do? You can go into as much detail as you want, with one warning that I'm sure Dom will jump on straight away, is please don't spend more time on the file note than you spend on the actual task itself.
Yeah, absolutely. I always think of it as the Goldilocks principle. You don't want to be your file note to be so short that it doesn't and contain so little information that it doesn't actually justify the time that you have spent and that you're recording. You also don't want it to be too long, because then judges start to develop the impression that perhaps the reason why you've had to spend so long in considering a medical report is because of this overly long attendance note that you've done. Judges are often critical where they think that you're copying and pasting out of other documents. That, in their view, isn't the purpose of a file note. You're supposed to summarise. So we want something that's just right, that Goldilocks principle, neither too short or too long. Above all, we're just retaining data. It's the information that your draftsman will use later to prepare the bill that the court will take into account in deciding whether it's reasonable or not.
Yeah. I mean, a very simple test is if you read your own file note and think, that doesn't explain what I did, then there's going to be a problem.
Absolutely. Yeah, read things back. Does it to your mind, if you didn't know anything about that file, actually justify what you were doing?
Another tip, when we see probably more often than we should, is where a solicitor, more often junior solicitors, self-assess. And by this, I mean they spend a certain amount of time on a job, a reasonable job, and they decide that they feel uncomfortable for whatever reason recording that time. This is different to not recording unreasonable time. We don't want to say a file note that says, you know, sat on the toilet reading my phone or putting a book on the shelf. I mean, you're not going to get that. But if you prepare a statement, again, to go back to that example, and it does take all day, and you have a reason, it doesn't have to be a reasonable reason. You know, it doesn't have to be, it could be that you wrote it and then rewrote it. It could be that you became bogged down in a particular issue. It could be you interrupted all day. As long as you explain it, it's our job to advise you on its recoverability. But if you self-assess, if you think, oh, I can't possibly put 7.5 hours down, I'll put 3 hours down because that's probably reasonable, then when it comes to the cost person who looks at a file note that says preparing statement for 3 hours, they're on the back foot, because they're going to assume at first instance that's the time you spent, and they will then invariably advise you, well, the judge will probably give you 2 hours, or the judge might give you 1.5 hours, or the statement was 3 pages long, we don't understand how it took 3 hours, and all the time it would have been better had you put the full time in, and we could have then advised you and brought it down, because one thing we can't do is put your time up. We can advise you to bring it down where we feel that it's unreasonable or it's at risk, but we certainly can't say, well, this is a 50-page statement. You've claimed 3 hours. Did you really claim 3 hours or did you spend longer than that? Because we are finding, we have found on more than one occasion, junior solicitors admit that they've been self-assessing their own time. So you must remember, it doesn't matter how tight your bill is, how tightly drawn it is, it will always be at risk of a reduction. You really should trust your cost provider to take your time recording and present this in the best way possible and advise you on that time which is at risk, because that's our job at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think...
We are both incredibly ill, but we're battling through this because we love our clients.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. There are probably lots of situations in which that someone has to make a decision whether or not something should go into a bill or not. That isn't necessarily the fee owner that's doing the work at the time. Your draftsman should later be able to take a view, as you suggest, and decide, well, perhaps this amount of time is too much. I think, though, the example of junior fee owners is a really good one. Junior fee owners will have lower hourly rates. The expectation is that it will take them longer to complete tasks than more senior fee owners. If you're a junior member of a team, I can imagine it's easier to develop the impression, seeing lots of experienced people around you doing things a lot quicker, that you should be working at the same rate. And that isn't really necessarily the case. Also, it's a good example, because I've had it said to me before by a few different judges, that it's usually the lot of junior fee owners to have delegated to them work which will be time consuming but will often as not actually be recoverable in full. It's more frequently the case that junior fee owners might have dubiously chargeable work allocated to them or delegated to them. In terms of those times when a fee owner does have to do a large task, some element of it in their mind, they might be thinking, actually, I don't know whether this should be chargeable or whether we should be making a charge for this. Again, that comes back down to your time recording, your file notes. If you think that something that you're doing perhaps shouldn't be charged and you're doing that as part of a larger task, keep a specific record of the amount of time that you've spent doing that one particular thing. Good example is a fee owner that's charged with collating all the documents that are going to be used and attached to the schedule of loss to substantiate all those losses. They might, as part of that, modern legal practice being as it is, as part of that, they might personally have to spend some time perhaps scanning some documents into a system or something like that. Make sure that you've made a record of the amount of time that you've spent on that dubiously chargeable. Scanning probably isn't a very good example, because we'd say it definitely isn't chargeable. But make sure you identify how much of that overall time you spent doing that thing that wasn't chargeable, so that your draftsman can just exclude that from the bill if that's the decision that's taken. But it also prevents a judge from having to just guess years from now how much of that overall block of time might have been spent on doing the thing that they disagree that you should charge for.
Yeah. Plus, of course, what is recoverable yesterday might not be recoverable tomorrow, and vice versa. I mean, for many years, if you were going to argue that you're on supervision and as part of delegation, you are on the back foot. And then, if you know, most recently, Master Gordon Sager came out and said, times have changed. You can now have supervision. It makes sense, because how can you delegate without supervising? Common sense judgment there. So there's no point self-assessing. And clarity is incredibly important, because ultimately what you may think is non-recoverable may become recoverable, or vice versa. One important part of time recording flows from budgeting. Obviously, post-Harrison, if you have a budget and your budget is approved and you continue to work beyond that, it's incredibly important that you monitor your spend against that budget, and time recording is the only way to really do that. But in respect of file notes, what we often see, because work isn't compartmentalized, is you will be doing a job that straddles multiple phases. So for the one person who doesn't know what I'm talking about, budgets are apportioned, split into phases, and ultimately your bill will mirror, that's my accent kicking in there, mirror the budgets, budget and phases. So if you do work on a day or a task in a set piece of time. The best example being, for example, if you attend your client and in that attendance you talk about an expert report and then take their statement, it's unhelpful in your file note to put attending client to discuss expert report, take statement, 2 hours, because we need to apportion that. You need to apportion that to be able to know what your spend is against those relevant phases. Because obviously if you're inside those phases, more often than not, you'll get paid. If you can separate that out in your file note, then everything is easy. In fact, it will make not only your recoverability better, but the bill will be prepared faster, because your cost drafts person is not sat there for 20 minutes agonizing over the content of that file note thinking, well, the witness statement is this many pages and the expert report was this many pages. So if I add them up and then use this bit of formula, then I'll pro-order it. No, we can avoid all that by you just saying, I spent 20 minutes talking about an expert report and the rest of it was statement. Job done. Because I see that all the time. If I had one major issue with time recording and file notes, is that it's not used properly in respect of budgeting, and it's almost counterintuitive when it comes to bill drafting.
Yeah, absolutely. It's another one, just it takes us back to doubt again. If the draftsman has had to do a kind of assessment and try to work it out again years after the fact, the judge might be sceptical of how that time has been split up. It may be that it makes a difference over a substantial number of entries, whether you've managed to stay within budget or not. The defendant, again, will use that to try and create doubt and say, actually, you've assigned these costs in between phases. Actually, there's a budget breach, and that should be, or you should be penalised for it in some way.
Perfect. So I think that's going to draw us to an end of the first ever podcast. Obviously, we don't want to talk. We could talk for hours in far more detail, but I really don't think that would be a good idea. So to summarise very quickly, time recording is very important. Please do it. Don't self-assess. Remember who your file notes are for. That's incredibly important. Apply the very simple 3-question test whenever you do a file note, particularly a file note of substance, which is, what are you doing? Why are you doing it? And how did it take so long? Be mindful of your language. Be aware of phasing. And just to say it again, don't self-assess. Any final words, Don?
For me, in relation to time recording, it's all data, data, data. I wonder, though, if we could perhaps, as part of this podcast, maybe there's room for us to establish something non-cost related. And so my proposal is perhaps that we could focus on insightful comments from professional wrestlers of the 80s and 90s.
Well, like Big Daddy.
Well, we're slightly before this time, but maybe if we can turn up some of his comments, it might be possible to get Shirley Crabtree. Was that his real name, or was that?
Yes, I think it was. I think it was.
Maybe it might be possible to get some of his comments down for posterity. I am very conscious, though, that straight out of the gate, if we did this, we'd be taking those comments in isolation. It wouldn't amount to us endorsing any other statement those people have ever made. I suspect that 80s and 90s wrestlers may have made an above average amount of problematic comments during their time in the spotlight.
Well, the Beano has, so I'm sure they did.
Well, what I'd like to propose for today are the words of Macho Man Randy Savage in conversation with Arsenio Hall from 1992. An amazing voice. I won't try and do an impression. But Arsenio Hall says to Macho Man Randy Savage, has Macho Man ever cried? And this is what Macho Man Randy Savage says. He says, oh yeah, it's okay for Macho Man to show every emotion available right there. You know, because I've cried 1,000 times, I'm going to cry some more. But I've soared with the eagles and I've slithered with the snakes. And I've been everywhere in between. And I'm going to tell you something right now. There's one guarantee in life, in that there are no guarantees. Yeah, and understand this. Nobody likes a quitter. Nobody said life was easy. So if you get knocked down, take the standing 8 count, get back up and fight again. And you're a macho maniac. Dig it.
Nice.
Powerful words.
They are.
Powerful words. Only a pedant would point out that it's not a standing 8 count if you get knocked down. But I don't think that undermines his message.
No. Well, so forgive any coughing, door knocks, giggling, laughing, This is our first ever podcast. I'm sure we'll get better and improve as we go on. Thank you for joining us on this short journey through time recording. We hope you've taken away at least one tip that is useful. The Partners in Cost podcast will be a regular event covering general cost issues and more specific points as they arise. Cost is always evolving. So join us in future episodes when we hope to have some special guests. I believe next time we may be discussing the exciting topic of indemnity basis costs. Edge of the seat stuff. So if you have any questions from this, please do let us know by emailing myself at lee.dixon@pic.legal. That's D-I-X-O-N, not D-I-C-K-S-O-N. That's a pork shop in the Newcastle. Or dominic.woodhouse@pic.legal. So it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.